Carnaby Street, San Francisco, flowers in your ear, we could do things.
Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Flax Online Audio Archive. I'm Colin Murphy, and that was Judge Vivian Lavin recalling the spirit in the air when Flax was formed 40 years ago in 1969. Here's Judge Lavin again on the first meeting with David Byrne when Flax was born, and the crucial role played by Hennessy Brandy.
I had spent Christmas in London, and I had arranged with David Byrne to collect me at Dublin Airport, and he collected me shortly after Christmas and said, I have been to a conference about legal aid for people who cannot afford legal representation. I want to talk about it. I have a half bottle of Hennessy Brandy. And the first night, we devoured the Hennessy. And then we got together with Dennis McCullough and Ian Candy, and we said, let's go. We hadn't a penny. Therein lies the gestation of Flax.
Their idea was to set up a student-run organisation that would provide legal advice to people who couldn't afford it, in particular in family law, which was then a poor relation of the law in general, as Judge Lavin recalls.
Most judges did not deal with family law in those years. Family law was a poor relation of law. There were very few judges and they were overburdened, but they didn't seem to have a perception of the difficulties that arise in family law cases.
They took the idea to the professional bodies. David Byrne, now Chancellor of Dublin City University and former Attorney General and EU Commissioner, recalls their response.
The Law Society was apprehensive about what it was that we were doing in the beginning. They were concerned that here were law students providing, you know, legal services. They're not qualified. How is this going to work? And, you know, will they be able to manage it? And they wanted to do a merger and acquisition, I suppose, with a modern phrase for it. We didn't want that. We wanted this to be a student-run organisation. And to avoid the risk of it being taken over by any one body, I invited a representative from the Law Society, the Bar Council, UCD Law Society, Law Faculty and Trinity to nominate a representative to sit on our executive committee. And that's what happened. And in fact, my memory is that from UCD we had Dr. John Kelly and from Trinity we had Cad Erasma.
This, though, was the 1960s. Pragmatic they may have been, but were these students also revolutionaries?
I don't think any of us were really involved in the Gentle Revolution, but if you remember the previous year, of course, there had been the riots in Paris. So, I mean, there was quite a lot of student activity throughout that 6-12 month period. And then there was the Gentle Revolution in UCD, principally. Then there was also the agitation and marching in relation to George in Dublin. That was also going on at that time as well. And our activity was in a tributary all of its own, I suppose. Our inspiration was to get in there and try and do something. I'm not in any way criticising those who did it a different way, but I think that probably we were determined to try and make a difference and provide whatever help that we could to people who had legal problems and weren't getting access to any legal advice. You know, one of the objectives that we had, as I said, was to lobby for the provision of civil legal aid, but we knew the best way to do that was to provide the evidence. These are the cases. Here's the size of the unmet legal need. You've got to do something about it. So I think that was a strong lesson. If you want to create change, you've got to provide the evidence. Marching is good, but providing evidence is better.
In April 1969, Flack opened its doors at Ozenham House, a facility of the Society of St. Vincent de Paul on Mountjoy Square in Dublin. What they found was surprising. David Byrne again.
Well, we found early on that mostly the people who came to see us were women, mostly middle-aged women, and mostly with marital problems. It became evident fairly quickly that there was a strong unmet legal need in relation to the provision of legal advice in marital breakdown. And that came as a surprise to people. There was not an awareness in Ireland at that time of this as an issue.
Senior counsel Urquhart Stewart was one of those who, as a young barrister, worked with Flack, specialising in the children's court. He recalls how he came to be involved.
I finished the bar in May 1970 and I intended to take a year off. I was supposed to go to Mexico. working in an orphanage. It fell through, so I came back. And when I came back to Ireland, I discovered that six children that I was involved with in the Sheriff Street area, and these were kids of the age 7, 8, 9, were charged with a criminal offence. It was to do with alleged attempted arson of their own national school. Now, the fire was pretty small, so there's nothing major in it, but they were all charged with arson. And based on what was going on in the courts in those days, those kids, had they been convicted, would have ended up in Dangan or Letterfrack for probably 5, 6, 7 years. And I know children of the age of 7 who spent 7 years away from their homes. And if you went to Letterfrack in the 1970s, the families in inner city Dublin would probably never see you, because to get to Galway, it was a trip by train, which was costly. But to get from Galway to Letterfrack was 60 miles with no bus, so it had to be a private arrangement. Anyway, those six kids, I was asked to defend them. I took the call to the bar. My very first case was defending those six. And from then, I was really hooked. And I probably spent every day in the children's court for a couple of years thereafter. And we set up a group of 10 lawyers called Lawyers for Children's Rights. This was in tandem with the FLAC, because FLAC was free legal advice. We were doing legal aid in the courts. People like Brian Gallagher, Garrett Sheehan, Brian Doolan were on that group of 10. And we literally ad hoc defended kids who came to us. I don't know how they ever found us, but we just defended them on a daily basis in the children's court. But criminal legal aid really wasn't properly established at all at that time.
Solicitor Paul O'Murchu was an early volunteer. He remembers his first night at Ozenham House.
I remember the first day vividly I went in. It would have been around possibly November, December 73, around then. And there was approximately downstairs, there was a waiting room, a long board of about 50, 60 people waiting. Upstairs, there were two big rooms on the first floor of 53 Mountjoy Square, a building called Ozenham House, run by the St. Vincent de Paul. And there were probably 15 to 20 volunteers sitting at a table and speaking to a client. And there was just the first night I was there, I sat in with Steve Coughlin. Steve was a solicitor, and then he became a barrister. He's from Limerick, and I sat with him for the first night. And then from afterwards, I would have seen my own clients. And the director at the time was John Quinn. Also, Barbara Hussey was working there, Anne Colley and David Maloney. And these were people who had been involved in the founding of FLAC in the early years. I suppose it was amazing to hear, sitting in with Stephen Coughlin, hearing people with their problems, and I suppose problems associated with poverty, very poor housing. This was early 70s in Dublin. A lot of the houses were falling down. 5 or 6 families would be living in the one building. So there was huge cramped conditions, no indoor toilet, no proper washing facilities. There was huge poverty. The problems were landlord and tenant, housing problems, family law, criminal law, domestic violence, the whole ambit of poverty existing in Dublin at that stage.
Another barrister to get involved in the relatively early days was the Honourable Mrs. Justice Catherine McGuinness, now Chair of the Law Reform Commission, who ran FLAC cases in the District Court in Dunleary in the mid-1970s. Here's Judge McGuinness on one rather seasonal case.
I do remember one quite extraordinary case where we had Santa Claus put in jail because the guy that was being Santa Claus in Lee's shop in Dunleary, unfortunately, as a side issue, was inclined to beat his wife. And so we looked for a barring order in front of Judge DeLapp, who was very helpful in family law cases. But unfortunately, Santa Claus didn't realise that you shouldn't shout at judges and try to throw things at them in court. And Judge DeLapp sent him to jail. So we came out and said, well, this is the first time we ever had Santa sent to jail.
Through the 1970s, FLAC survived as a volunteer-run, part-time organisation. But in 1978, a government grant allowed them to open and staff an office. Jerry Durkin, now a senior counsel, became FLAC's first full-time administrator. He recalls what the job entailed.
We had an office in Talbot Street on top of a bookies, where you went up a lane to get into the office, and where I was told one of the first pieces of instructions I was given when we got into the offices was I was told that if there was a raid on the bookies, that it was better to stay upstairs. And it was that kind of a place. That was kind of the level it was at. I had a great life at the time. I was organizing centers, but you got to remember, even the Department of Justice didn't know this. I was also organizing all the demonstrations. FLAC used to be a campaigning organization, so I would organize the demonstrations as well, even though I wasn't meant to do that. I remember hiring buses to bring people in from UCD to picket the Department of Justice, who were paying for the privilege. And that was fairly normal, so it was great fun.
Fun it may have been, but how significant was FLAC? Jerry Durkin again.
You've got to understand, on the family law day up in Kilmainham Court, there might be 60 cases. 40 or 50 of those would have been FLAC, would have represented everybody, quite often on both sides. It's hard to conceive of the thing now, but barristers at the time would have been retained to go down, do cases for nothing. A barrister might go up to Kilmainham knowing they were in four or five family law cases that day for FLAC. On any rational basis, it was all mad. The turnover in a year was probably in excess of 20,000 cases. We were representing 8,000 people a year in court. What you had was a fully fledged legal aid system, albeit on a voluntary basis being run by students. The whole thing was quite mad. It was an Irish, classic Irish solution to an Irish problem.
FLAC's impact was not simply felt in the law, but on the campuses. Jerry Durkin.
The one thing I would have huge reservations about now, I think the student involvement in it isn't as great as it was. And the one thing that it did do to all of us, and I think we've stayed that way, is it kind of radicalised us just by seeing what was actually happening to people. And I think there's a whole generation of people who came out like that.
Senior Counsel Bill Shipsey was then chairman of FLAC. He too remembers FLAC's role on the streets, campaigning for the right to legal aid, a campaign that received a significant boost when the European Court of Human Rights found against Ireland for failing to provide legal aid to Josie Airey in the Airey case in 1979. Bill Shipsey.
It was just after the Airey decision. It was when the Legal Aid Board was promised and was about to start. So for about 2 years between 1978 and 1980, FLAC was very active, very prominent on the campuses, certainly in UCD and Trinity, and we were on the streets a lot. And there were, at times, I don't know if there were a couple of hundred, but certainly 150, 200 law students fairly regularly picketing the Dáil and picketing the Department of Justice. The protests were fun. You felt you were getting, you know, an opportunity to take the issue of legal aid in a very public way on the streets. Radical may be too strong a word for it, but concerned law students and law students who wanted to see things done a little bit differently. I suppose believing that that was important and believing that in order to affect change, you actually had to confront government and make it a priority. Because in the mid-1970s, obviously, you had a coalition government in that period and there was lots of law reform. But in order for legal aid to be moved up the political agenda, you had to go to the streets and you had to make it a bigger political issue.
The tensions weren't simply on the streets. FLAC itself was riven by a debate over going on strike, as Bill Shipsey remembers.
And it was a very contentious issue within FLAC, whether you would do more damage to the people you were trying to help by withdrawing the services, or whether by continuing to provide those services, you were allowing the government not to bring in a civil legal aid scheme. And there were very long, contentious discussions at FLAC. I remember one particular EGM where very narrowly we decided that we would go on strike as a means to put pressure upon the government to introduce the civil legal aid scheme. I'm not sure whether people who continued on the service, even though we had gone on, decided to go on strike. But I also don't I remember that it didn't actually, I think we set a time limit for it. It wasn't going to be an indefinite decision. Certainly in 1980 is when the Legal Aid Board was established and when the first law centres came into being. But it was, I suppose, a recognition also on our part that we were providing a service, but it wasn't necessarily the professional service that clients demanded. And we wanted a state-funded one where fully qualified lawyers would be providing a full-time professional service and not, as it were, from 7:30 to 9 on a Tuesday or Wednesday evening in different centres around the city.
FLAC moved into an office on South William Street in 1985, which was where Paul Joyce found it when he started working for FLAC in 1991. Now senior policy researcher, Joyce recalls some of the key moments for FLAC since.
When I started working in FLAC, we were in the top floor of a ramshackle building in South William Street. Back then it was the wholesale textile fashion retail area. We were up the top floor of the building. There was a massage parlour a couple of floors below. On the ground floor there was an amusement arcade. So it was very different. Now obviously FLAC has its own building, has moved to the north side of the city, has its own building in Dorset Street. I suppose that was a very significant development. Social welfare quality arrears case in the mid-90s was also very significant. There was a huge amount of work went into that case. It was a challenge to the application of an EU directive for the social welfare entitlements of married women. The move, obviously, from South William Street to our own premises really changed the ballgame. I mean, in South William Street, we were up, as I say, up the top floor of a building. The staff was much smaller. I mean, you've heard this evening, there's 12 permanent staff now. Back in those days, there were three, maybe four, sometimes two and a half. You were answering the phones and at the same time trying to get other things ready in terms of cases and training and policy work and so on. So, I mean, now you're looking at a much more, in terms of the head office, a much more developed organisation with a lot more capacity than we would have had back then, you know.
Earlier, Gerry Durkin worried that FLAC had lost some of its contact with its original student base. Liam Thornton got involved in FLAC as a student and was appointed to FLAC's council while still a student. FLAC has made a renewed effort to engage with the student body, says Thornton.
When it became more professional and when they had individuals, professionals taking charge of the organisation, there may have been a slight detachment with kind of the student-led early years. But in the last number of years, there has been a significant re-engagement with student bodies, with law schools, to ensure that the message of FLAC gets out and to ensure that students are aware that there is this organisation. Law is not about, and this is a personal opinion, law is not about making the rich richer. And what is critical in law is that equality and non-discrimination are at the very heart of all laws. And FLAC as a body has, over the last number of years, re-engaged with the student body to give them that message, to let them know there is an organisation. You know, law is not about commercial law, property dealings. It's solely about that. It's so much more multifaceted than that. And in particular, advocating the rights of those who may not have a platform on which they will get a willing ear to listen to them.
Ruth Dowling, currently a baby barrister, as she says, in her devilling year, joined FLAC as a student and has stayed involved. To conclude this podcast, she reflects on what she has gained from that experience.
I got in there and I saw the shortcomings of the legal profession, the shortcomings of the legal aid profession, the problems in society, and it was really brilliant to kind of show me that the law isn't just about the fat cats and the commercial contracts, that you can use the law to help people and it doesn't have to be about money. So I always thought human rights work was about people in third world countries, whereas in fact being in FLAC showed me that human rights work can happen in inner city Dublin, Galway, wherever it is. So from that perspective, it was great. And it also showed that by being a barrister or a solicitor and working in the normal way, you can still make change. My perception had been, if you're a barrister or solicitor, you're just following a path, you're stuck doing whatever you're given, you can't make change happen. Whereas having worked in FLAC, I saw that being at a desk in the office, you're limited in what you can do. You still need that person to go into the courtroom to speak to the judge for the person who needs change. And I hope that can be my role in my profession, in that I've got the outlook from FLAC to see what needs to be done, and I have the capacity, being a barrister, to go into that courtroom with the legal help of a solicitor and to put that case forward to the judge.
You've been listening to a podcast on the history of FLAC, produced to mark its 40th anniversary. You can listen to the individual segments of this podcast and to the original interviews from which they were taken at FLAC's online audio archive at www.flac.ie. This podcast and the archive have been produced by me, Colin Murphy.